Welcome to our program, the Winners and Losers Radio Program. We used to run this for about 10 years on Shepherd University Radio, and they finally got rid of us for political reasons, really.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, not, in part. Part, they didn't have enough money to manage the station, and so they basically shut it down as far as
live. Well, that's sad.
I mean, well, they didn't shut it all the way down, but they basically just, the idea of having a talk show on it, they started getting calls from some of your friends, our friends, would-be friends, not quite, actually more adversaries in the House of Delegates. Yeah. So from this area, anyway, that's what happened to that. But anyway, we restarted it. We had a little trial during the pandemic, but we restarted it as an internet thing, and I managed to automate enough of it here to, you know, not have to spend 24 hours a day.
So, right. Right.
Anyway, welcome to the program. And I'm delighted that you connected in. I've been reading some about your program from my friend John Christensen, who I think you've met.
Yeah.
And we are trying to find people to make our local labor council here in the Eastern Panhandle. JB and I have been, you know, working in various roles on that for almost 20 years now. And he's the president currently. So,
right.
Anyway, and so we're trying to do a little bit more than has sometimes been the case with AFL-CIO stuff. And the leadership's trying to do more, too. Everyone's looking for a way out of what looks like a pretty terrible box. So yeah. I guess I want to start with you giving your own introduction for yourself. What you've been doing for your life in the way of, you know, work and politics. And actually, what got you in mind to actually run for governor? You're running for governor, right? Against
it's U.S. Senate.
Oh, so you're running for the Senate. Oh, my gosh. So yeah. You're going to be right. But that's why you're running against justice. That's right. That's why you're running against justice. Okay. Okay. Give me your best shot.
Yeah. Background on me. I was born in West Virginia. I went to high school in Monroe County, James Monroe. Went to about a semester of college at Concord, figured out I couldn't afford it. So I joined the Marines. I was in the Marine Corps for 5 years. Two and a half of that was at a fleet anti-terrorism security team. The other two and a half were just regular infantry. So when I got out in 2015, I got out as a sergeant. Worked different jobs throughout. I was in Seattle for a little bit. I moved back home to West Virginia to take care of my grandmother. And just saw how bad off West Virginia has gotten since I had left in 2010. And I only been back a couple of times.
Right.
So when I came back, I just saw, you know, things gotten worse. So I began diving in on my free time, trying to help feed the homeless in Beckley and parts of Southern West Virginia. Then I started getting warming layers, like coats, beanies, toboggans, what have you, socks for people in the wintertime. And right. We were doing that. Then I found a community that had poison water, or the water wasn't drinkable because of old mines in the ground, or they buried toxic waste in the ground. So I got together some organizers, and we delivered 8,500 bottles of water, I believe. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, to this community. And after that, I got picked up by a couple of organizations, and I started working some political campaigns. So I've been pushing for legislation here in D.C. We were fighting for Build Back Better for a very long time, People Act, Pro Act.
Right.
Working different political campaigns, trying to push people to win here in West Virginia. I was a campaign manager for one last year for a little House Douglas race down south. And my biggest thing that I've been doing really for legislation, outside legislation, for community organizing wise, was helping people with the addiction crisis. Really doing a lot with the organizers there, doing Narcan training, trying to break the stigma off Narcan.
Right.
Going into my regular stuff, mutual aid of, like, you know, helping people out when it's needed. The other one is I've been going across the coal fields of West Virginia predominantly, pushing for renewable energy and having people, you know, bring solar panels to their towns. And it's been quite a lot of success. A lot of people are very interested in embracing EV charging stations and solar panels. That's been my biggest thing. Then for the past year, I've been strategizing this run, and we announced October 15th this run to primary Senator Manchin, and he retired.
Yeah,
my campaign has taken off since then.
All right. So, so my first question is really a repeat of the first. Of your introduction, which is trying to figure out the what the strategy might be for victory, and your background in the Marine Corps. When I first went to work for the United Electrical Workers in 1976, I was sent to Boston, where one of the original CIA organizers of the UE and he was retired, but he was still training young organizers. His name was Don Tormey. And, one of my first weeks on the job, about 6 weeks on the job, I got a call from a camera shop that we represented near Boston, in South Boston. And the call was that the people had walked out of the shop and we're on strike, even though the contract was not expired. So it was the question of the legality of the strike was now yet to be determined. But anyway, and I called up my mentor and I said, well, what should we do? And he says, well, I would get out there and tell them if they're on strike, they should start picketing. and I said, well, what are the rules for this? I mean, I'd been on strike before, but actually a lockout, but I wasn't quite. He says, well, there's two rules for a strike and three rules for socialism. And he was a socialist. And he said, the first rule is don't leave anybody behind. And the second one is find something for everyone to do. And the third is make sure it's equal pay and safe work. So how do we have a program for progress in West Virginia that doesn't leave people behind?
So one of my biggest things is, of course, I'm pro-union, right? One of my biggest things is we need to bring renewable jobs here. And what does that look like? So let's bring the manufacturing jobs to West Virginia. Let's build the solar panels. Let's build the windmills here. Predominantly, it's all built in China, from what I believe. Why can't we have those manufacturing jobs here in West Virginia? Make them union. And then through that, you can put a lot of people to work. And you can also begin that just transition that everyone talks about, but no one actually tries to put into action here. You have to justify transition for miners, fossil fuel workers, what have you, pay them the same wage and get them, if they want to, get them transitioned into these new manufacturing jobs. And that stimulates the economy in West Virginia, that ensures no one's left behind, of course, by their own choosing. You know, if they don't want to work that, then course. And it's going to take time to do that. And that's the reality we have to face, but we have to actually make that step in the right direction, or just embracing that industry. And that's been my biggest point here, is making union, bring it here, build it here. West Virginia used to power the nation with energy. Let's do it again in a future technology.
What about this hydrogen hub project that looks like it's going to get off the ground and involves quite a bit of money and energy?
I've been researching into it. I've heard mixed opinions on it. I don't have enough to really give you a whole educated opinion on it. I've heard mixed things. Some people say it's good, some people say it's not something we can embrace yet. I can't speak to you on a.
No, I hear. No, well, me neither. So, yeah. I listened to a lengthy presentation on it. And of course, I think the leadership of the AFL was invited to a different meeting attended by none other than Bill Gates,
right,
who is obviously has been spending a lot of money in energy projects, mostly alternative energy projects, although he includes that as nuclear in that as well.
Right.
But, you know, since I used to work for Microsoft, I can assure you that if Bill gets involved, he's like an unstoppable force.
Right.
Because he has, I never met him personally when I worked for Microsoft, but I worked for a lot of people that did. And he was kept, they kept telling me that, you know, he's a very approachable guy, but once he makes up his mind, watch out.
Fair enough.
Because he'll lose his whole fortune. He'll stake everything, you know. You know, that's something to reckon with. So the problem is with the Hub project, in my view, is that you're going to end up with someone like Bill Gates. He'll own the state. Like
yeah,
the coal mines
that's
used to.
How
do we get around this problem? It seems.
But how do we get around from like basically?
Well, how do you get the public interest in control of its resources? And this is kind of a socialist idea, right? But I mean, I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, nationalizing everybody. I'm just saying, how does the state get control of its natural wealth so it can redirect it in a direction that benefits? That does the things you're talking about.
Well, yeah, like just like what I'm doing, you have to have people that are actually fighting for the state, fighting for working class Washingtonians, Americans running for office, and we have to change that game. Right now, and you can say it's not even just Washingtonians, across America, most of our resources are sold to different areas. Let's say West Virginia, for example. Our resources, our coal doesn't really power us here. We sell elsewhere. Up in the Panhandle, you have the windmills, and you have the windmills up there powering D.C. doesn't do anything for West Virginia. Ultimately, if you want to start changing the tide of that, you have to start getting people elected for office that won't be bought off by corporate interests, that won't be trying to line their own pockets, and actually be fighting for what's good for this state and what's good for the people here. And you have some of that, of course, but on by far and large, we need more of it. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this run, to show that your everyday guy, I'm a working class guy, you can run for office and you have to. At the end of the day, it doesn't have to be a suit and tie politician. You know, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take the working class to actively run and try to change things for ourselves.
You think there's a lesson in the recent strike movement this past summer and fall?
Yes. It shows that how the labor movement's kind of coming back. With all the strikes happening, it shows that people are in America are getting fed up. You know, our wages stay stagnant, rent keeps going up, prices keep going up, but you know we're not getting paid. And people, especially in West Virginia, especially from all my organizing, going through people's communities and asking, you know, what's going on, what's the problem here, is predominantly there's no jobs. They can't people have to choose between rent or groceries. Gas prices, they can't afford to get to work. Child care is unaffordable because you have to pay for the gas or bills. And I mean, I understand that struggle as well. So that's one of my biggest points here, is that we have a lot of out-of-touch politicians across the nation and in the state. And I think a lot of them have forgotten about how the struggle is for working class America.
You know, Karen and I think Karen's online here. That's her telephone.
I am. Hello, Zach.
Hey, how you doing?
And
doing great. I'm sorry we're not seeing each other's face. I'm traveling and my Zoom app wasn't working, so I had to call in.
No, you're
but
okay.
Welcome. I'm so glad that you joined us. And one thing that I've been paying attention to, you know, just to piggyback on the energy discussion, is, West Virginia, you know, we're not going to go from A to Z, because it's just not, the political climate isn't there. So I think the all of the above approach to energy is necessary in West Virginia. It's what's going to move us forward, because, we can't get too progressively, excited about it because we do have to bring everybody on board. And what I'm hoping is that the discussion starts happening, that we stop politicizing energy by the type of energy it is.
Yes.
Like everybody's, you know, everybody, no matter what party you're with or, you know, what your thoughts are, we should be working together to, first of all, produce energy that is here in the United States. I'm totally in agreement there. And that, you know, isn't destructive, you know, or is the least destructive. But that does include, you know, hanging on to fossil fuels while that transition is happening, and kind of just like taking the, you know, bad words, you know, when Republicans believe in this and Democrats believe in this and progressives
right.
this, and just kind of bringing everybody together, like, listen,
yeah.
all of these energy sources are important to look at, to pay attention to, and to utilize just to advance, you know, which is a natural part of life.
Right. And that's why that's why I keep harping on just transition, just transition, just transition, because a lot of times you're a lot of liberal talking points outside of West Virginia. I've been on interviews before where they say, why not kill coal? Well, you can't just kill coal immediately. That's not a reality. You can't just throw people out of jobs immediately and not care. Also, you know, that's why I'm saying, let's start building the manufacturing here. Let's start embracing that and then start that transition period. And how long that will take, I couldn't tell you, maybe 10 years. But at least get the ball rolling. Instead of right now, we're just staying stagnant, hoping that
opening the lines of communication. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
my thing. I just want to get the ball rolling to embrace these technologies. That way we can get ahead of it, and West Virginia can become an actual, a powerhouse. And right now on the path we're on, we're going to be left behind. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Robert C. Byrd said something very similar to that a decade ago. Mm-hmm. But I could, yeah.
Well, he Byrd kind of...
Actually, over Thanksgiving, I was traveling out to, I think the town I went to, it was Monroe, south of Parsons down there.
Yeah, that's where it is.
Is that right? Is
sure.
there a little town called Monroe? Okay, so
there's a campground.
You're more familiar with that part of the state. But I'll tell you, you know, I was traveling across, you know, Quarter H, and just that stretch, you know, over to Tucker County from you know, the Eastern Panhandle is just breathtaking. And I thought about, Senator Byrd, and, you know, of course, all the wind turbines are there. And I actually think it's beautiful. I mean, I got chills just driving across there. You know, it was early Thanksgiving morning that I headed out, and I felt like I was the only person on the planet. It was like nobody on the road. And it was just absolutely breathtaking. And if we can start making the shift about, you know, just how wonderful West Virginia is, and that we can all work together to utilize, you know, the resources we have here.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes down to it, like you just said, it should be it should be all of us together working on this. It's not a party issue. It's really just trying to, what's good for West Virginia, what's good for the economy, and what's good for workers end of the day.
Right.
Well, I have a suggestion. So sure. Have you had a conversation about this campaign yet with Cecil Roberts?
Have I talked to him?
Yeah.
No, I have not, no.
Well, I would suggest the following foundation for a discussion. And that is, since Cecil, I know, thinks about this, and he is a member of the Blue-Green Alliance, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
What would be an acceptable negotiation for coal miners in West Virginia that should their jobs be abolished in favor of some other technology? What would be the deal that would make it okay with miners? And what's the price? What's it cost? And what happens?
Absolutely. That's a much needed conversation.
It's a kind of thing where if you have a starting point, okay. The miners had a discussion among themselves and said, you know, if our country wants us to fall on our swords, you know, what's the deal? You know, what is the deal? Now, Senator Manchin has said straight out, you know, I commend him for his honesty at times, okay? But I don't agree with him. He said straight out, this is capitalism. The market solves all these problems. He said that the other day in the Senate, okay? You don't need all these industrial policies, you know, except, of course, defense.
right.
You know, but, you know, you don't need all these industrial policies because the markets, the miracle of capitalism will get everybody a job. And I just say, well, the miracle of globalization in the 70s and 80s and 90s didn't left millions of people behind, and the consequence was Trump, in my opinion. That's just one of my little opinions, you know?
No, you're
so
right.
How do we get beyond?
Oh, and you know, to comment on that, John and Zach, is that, I mean, it's very clear that Senator Manchin has not had to struggle about where his next meal is coming from. No. And it's so important when you're making those broad statements about capitalism. Capitalism leaves a lot of people in the dust.
Yes, it does.
And when you are coming from nothing, it's hard to be a force in the capitalistic society, you know? And I think it's so important to remember the real struggle that Zach is talking about of many, many, too many West Virginians. And that poverty struggle is, you know, creating a lot of social ills and, you know, mental health crises and everything.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, when he makes those types of blanket statements, he has to remember that, you know, it's some of our West Virginians really don't, they aren't a player in the capitalistic, you know, formula.
And that's exactly what you just said is exactly right. And predominantly with the system as it is, West Virginia has been left out and forgotten about. And that's kind of how the system works. The industry started dying decades ago and we got left behind. And that's left an entire population in the dust. That's left us with not many opportunities here. So, yeah, I would disagree with what a Senator Manchin should say on that. And that's why I'm out here advocating for West Virginia, because we've been forgotten about for so long. And to speak on the whole, you know, the Donald Trump effect, so many West Virginians, you know, Bernie Sanders is very popular here too. And so with Donald Trump. Why is that? Because both of them came across genuine, and both of them came across as caring about people here. Now, I don't think Trump was genuine or cared, but he played that card.
Yeah.
And it worked for him. And ultimately, that's one of the things that I'm moving with here, is that West Virginians want somebody who understands where they're coming from and will fight for them. And we haven't had that in a long time, but people here saw that in Trump. They wanted someone to throw a brick through the window and say, hey, we're still here. Don't forget about us. That's why people embrace Trump, because that's kind of what his rhetoric was. He was, you know, an outsider. He was willing to take on DC, blah, 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 blah. And so really, I said, West Virginia needs a fighter. And that's what I'm standing left to be. So, you know, if y'all want someone to understand where you're coming from, you want someone to represent you and not a bunch of corporate interests, that's me. Because at the end of the day, no one wants to be poor. No one wakes up and actually decides to live in poverty, and a little boy or girl wants to be addicted, a victim of trafficking, houselessness, joblessness, etc. when they grow up. And we have to actively fight against that. And this current system as it is not allowing that in West Virginia.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, what kind of organization are you building here? And are you having any success? Obviously, if you haven't got $1 million, you know, organizing has to, you know, my old mentor I was just telling you about, he said, if I had 25 solid organizers, I could take over the state of West Virginia, Massachusetts.
No, you're right. And it's not, in the day, it's not about money. Money helps, absolutely. And believe me, we are fundraising, and fundraising's taking off. But end of the day, my ground game's spectacular. We have volunteers signing up every day. I have a very well-functioning, talented team. I think I might be the only campaign in the state that has a team.
Well, that's important. By the way, that's the first question that is on the COPE questionnaire in the AFL this time is that, well, you want to run for office and you agree with everything we agree with, but do you have any organization, or are you going to have us do all of it for you?
Yeah. Well, that's you just know, it. I'm you know, me being a community organizer, for instance, I have a network here across West Virginia I've built, and I know most of the organizers here. And yeah, when I said the network is set up, and we're just, I've been building upon that for a long time. So ultimately, like I said, my ground game is spectacular. And I'll say that with confidence.
Let me ask, what's your, do you have any opposition yet in the, within the Democratic Party?
Not yet. I'm the only Democrat running.
Okay. So, well, I'm sure.
I have a question for you, Zach, that, you know, I was so disappointed. I'm glad you brought up the run when Bernie was so popular in West Virginia when he was running. And actually, John and I were on the radio at that point doing our show. And John knows how disappointed I was with the DNC for, you know, the treatment of Bernie. And I really think we changed the trajectory of the United States when the DNC kind of turned their back on Bernie's popularity.
Yeah.
And I worry about that for a candidate like you. You know, I worry about the conventional DNC or the Democratic Party in West Virginia just not being able to embrace, you know, a good kind of down-to-earth candidate like you, which I still am a Bernie lover. I think he really got shafted, and I was very upset with the DNC.
Well, I can tell you directly that Bernie was astounded at the progress that he did make. Okay, so when I first met Bernie, and I was the UE rep in Vermont, and the first time I met Bernie, I'd gone. We didn't have any locals in Burlington, and I knew about him from some left wing thing that was been going on. He came to some meeting, and he'd been down in New York before, but he decided he was going to run for mayor, and he didn't have any money at all, and of course he was, you know, openly a socialist, right? Independent and socialist. And so the way he started it out was going around and basically following the police radio to disasters and traffic accidents and all kinds of other things that were happening. And I remember I was up in Burlington and I was talking to him, you know, and he says, well, come with me. I'll show you what I'm doing. And we got in the car and we were driving around, you know, Burlington. And sure enough, he had his police van and there was an accident at one of the intersections. And so he came up, he says, stop here. And he gets out, you know, and he goes over and the cops are there and they don't want to talk to anybody. But the media has arrived because it's a multi-car thing. And and the media is trying to get the cops to talk to them, and they won't talk. The cops didn't want to talk to the media. And Bernie says, I'll talk to you. I'll tell you what this accident means. And you see, he says, you see those holes in the road going up and down the street here? And he says, those are most likely the cause of this accident. And why are they there? Because the utility companies dig up the holes all the time and do not repair them with any quality repair. And so they erode, and the streets of Burlington end up looking like the surface of the moon. And so and he got that. And sure enough, next day, there was a headline in the Burlington Free Press, I think it's called, and Bernie, he kept doing that. And, of course, he built an organization out of mostly progressive forces, some labor forces, our union. We were left-wing union, more or less, you know, so we backed
up. A story like that, John, it really kind of highlights how we are stuck in a political climate of labels. But really what you're talking about is what people care about. You know, I don't care what party you're with. You care about, you know, safety. You care about, you know, having roads that aren't tearing up your car. I know that Charleston, you know, people spend so much money fixing their cars in Charleston because of the potholes. Like, I don't, you know, that crosses all party lines. People just want a decent life. And that's, that's how, you know, that's, those are the things that Bernie addressed, and he addressed them authentically.
You know, when he got to be mayor, he actually carried on that campaign, and it got so bad that the utility companies in the state, you know, got the Public Service Utilities Commission to just, you know, defeat all these efforts to get them to pay for the cost of repairing the roads, which is the issue that Bernie wanted to put on them. And they won. The Public Service Utility won. You know, they killed that bill. They wouldn't let it go any further. And Bernie, and looked like a big defeat for him. And he came out and he said, this is an example of a lesson that we can all learn. And it says, if you try to challenge the privately controlled energy companies, you know, acting against the public interest, they will take over, you know, the Public Utility Commission and shut you down. I propose that we rename the Public Utility Commission the Private Utility Commission and be done with it as a state office. And man, he got a resolution on that passed in the state legislature, okay, because it was so blatant, you know, the things. Before he, you know, so he very, very smart tactically about how to have an issue developed so that it exposed the underlying problem, you know, a little bit to people. And even if you lost ideologically, you won on a particular fight. So anyway, it was very interesting the way he evolved that whole thing. I remember he came to our first in 81 and 82 when the layoffs were huge in the machine tool industry. He came to our unemployed council or unemployed committee meeting, which we were very large at the time. And everybody thought he was going to come down and grandstand because he was thinking about, at that point, running for Congress. And he didn't. He just brought a truckload of food, socks, and clothing. And he wouldn't speak. He just sat with everybody. And I want to tell you, nothing impressed the members of that local in Springfield, Vermont, like that. It blew their mind that somebody meant what they said and would show up in trouble and not grandstand.
Right.
So it was really, it was a big moment for us.
There's a lot to learn from that, Zach. So what are you doing around the state? Like, how are you getting the word out?
Well, I've done like 30 plus interviews so far. I'm doing launches across the state. So right now we've done, obviously my first launch was in Charlestown. Then we did one in Morgantown a couple weeks ago. Starting in January, we'll be doing more in Charleston, Huntington, Bluefield, and Fayetteville. So we're getting all those sort of out to help spread that word. Also, I'm on social media, fight the good fight there. And really, it's just, you know, it's going door to door, going to communities, meeting community leaders, and finding media and getting supporter planned events and like in the kickoff events, like I talked about.
Now, are you planning on spending some time in Charleston during the legislative session?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Well, maybe we'll see you when we get. I know. I remember our retirees, Alliance for Retired Americans. We're going to be down there in January. So maybe we can hook up.
We'll probably find each other.
Yeah. So anyway, but well, Zach, it's just I just if you need some recruiting to go on around here, your emphasis on the just transition and leave no one behind, and this could be the time. This could be
absolutely.
And absolutely. You know, so any way we can help out, I'm 100% behind you personally. So,
well, I really appreciate that, believe me. And yeah, absolutely. I've got to come back on and we can talk about it. Yeah, talk about
I'll try to get a good and welfare hearing at our labor council even before the COPE season opens up, see if that works out. Okay,
absolutely. Yeah, please do. Okay. Please do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure I'll be in Charleston a couple times, so I'll send you a message and maybe we can sit down and talk face to face and see what we can do here in the Eastern Panhandle to help you out some more.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Okay. That's great, man. Take care of yourself. Okay. All right. We'll be looking after you.
Good luck.
Karen, you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Anyway, hey, I was going to let you know, I think I sent you a note, but that the county commissions, which we were talking about last week, I think, they are meeting first and third Thursday, first Thursday of the month at 9.
I saw that. I'm like, yeah. Boy, that's a good way to confuse people to make sure they don't come.
Well, you know, I was talking to some other people about it. You know, I was talking to Mike, you know, but, you know, his wife is afraid that if he goes, he would have somebody might get injured, you know. just
yeah. Well, there's that.
You know, because they, you know. You know, Mike spends his retirement down in the basement, you know, bench pressing 350 pounds, you know, so. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I will. I've got that kind of noted on my schedule. Like I said, it'll be the new year thing for me.
I think if we did, committed ourselves to like an hour, we might.
I think it's important. I think we should.
You know, if we could stand an hour of being there with that. Okay. And, well, we might not be able to. I mean, I'm prepared to think, you know, oh my God, you know, I'm going to have to scream if I hear too much more. But I think if we could acquire a little good sense about what the rules for public comment or what they were doing, especially what the budget process was, because they're the only entity with taxing authority of any serious kind in the county.
Right.
So if you're going to do something, if it doesn't go through there, somebody else is going to have to pay for it. Yeah. So anyway.
Right. You know, I think it's really important for us to get the finger on the pulse of that, because like I said, people ask me and I just don't know enough about it, especially since I haven't moved back into the area. But I have a feeling just from people I've talked to, because they feel kind of a helplessness with national politics, and now that they see, you know, Jefferson County went red, they just, I don't want to lose voters. You know, I want to be able to have like an answer when people ask me something about that, so I can be like, it's really important that you vote locally too, you know? I think it just kind of compounded what happened in Jefferson County, because people kind of are just like, oh my God, the county's going to crap too, you know? Mm-hmm. And then just people kind of lose interest in voting. They feel like, you know, yeah. I've just noticed that in the county. I mean, I've had people comment to me that they didn't vote last cycle, who I would have never imagined didn't vote. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And they're just like, I'm just sick of it. But you know, I feel like the best thing I can do is just be a little more educated on the county issues, and I'm sure it'll be fascinating.
I don't know
if it'll be good for my blood pressure.
True. But we have questions. There are some. I think, you know, Patsy Nolan is retired now, right? Okay, Jim Sercamp's a little. He's very eccentric, in my view, but whatever. But anyway, we have some past commissioners. Len Widmeyer is still in the county. I mean, we could get former commissioners if we go there and we see what's going on, and we could have a couple of interviews where we got a feel. Is this normal?
Has this been protocol?
It's just the way
things. Okay, well, that sounds great.
You know, so we could build some community. All right, pal. Well, thank you for getting back in by phone. I think we got a good little show today.
Sure thing. Yeah, I'm so glad. I like the guy. I think it's good for West Virginia. No matter what happens, it's really good that we got to keep people's minds open.
Whew. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I liked him.
That's good stuff. Okay. I do too. I think he's got
I'm going to have to take the. Excuse me, the dog. By the way, our cat Wallace is dying.
Oh.
He's right here at my feet.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Wallace.
Yeah. he got some kind of intestinal cancer. Well, I don't know. He was being quiet. Now he's making some noise. But anyway. You hear that?
Take care of him. Oh, well, yeah, keep me posted.
Okay, pal. Take care.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Recording stopped.
What's going on, sweetie?